To the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, welcome, welcome. A minute past the hour here for the live version of the program this Tuesday evening, and it is a, and I mean, no kidding, beauty, an absolute beauty here in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful West by God, Virginia. It's April 15th. Do you know where your tax dollars are? I know where most of them are. It is traditional in our culture to bemoan the woes of the taxpayer on April the 15th. And I guess, you know, carping about paying taxes is something that somehow makes us feel better or more independent. I would feel virtually unbothered about April 15th were it not for the fact that out of every tax dollar paid, some 44 cents of it is going to, let's be honest, murder brown people. Other portions are going to do other stupid things. Meanwhile, we can't go to the doctor when we're sick, every American. Copays on medicines are getting ridiculously expensive, so that they are expressed not as a dollar amount by the pharmaceutical industry and by the insurance companies, but rather as a percentage of cost. We'll maybe take a look at that here a little bit later. I've got that in the stack, and it is disgusting. I want a well-funded nation. I don't know about you, but I do. I want a well-funded nation. I want a nation that doesn't have to rob Peter to pay Paul when it comes time to build a road. Or to fix, more importantly, to fix a road. I want a nation that can not even blink at the idea of universal, single-payer, nationalized healthcare. What's that? $350 billion? We can do that. We got that in petty cash. I want that nation. Because it seems that there are several nations through the world that do that to one extent or another. And they seem to be getting along rather nicely. But not us. No, we're in a $3 trillion war hole. So, you know, as I said, it's April 15th. Do you know where your tax dollars are? They're in Iraq. They're in Afghanistan. They are waiting patiently beneath the Pentagon for the word to be given for an attack on Iran. Yeah, really, no kidding. How I wish that we had, how I sincerely wish we had a nation that was serious about being a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. But we do not. We have a nation that is intent upon being a government of the corporations, by the corporations, and for the corporations. We have a government whose philosophy is no longer a pluribus unum or nullus ordo seclorum. No, our nation's motto is free trade! Isn't it? Disturbing little piece of information flowing out from one of the Wingnut websites, whose updates I get periodically. Is it true? Sincerely, I don't know. But they're rooting for it in right-wing world. And if they're rooting for it in right-wing world, you know that George Bush is at least thinking about it. Headline: Source, U.S. strike on Iran nearing. Contrary to some claims that the Bush administration will allow diplomacy to handle Iran's nuclear weapons program, a leading member of America's Jewish community tells Newsmax, yes, Newsmuck, Richard Mellon Scaife's Newsmuck, that a military strike is not only on the table, but likely. This is the quote from the source, who they conveniently don't name. Israel is preparing for heavy casualties, the source said, suggesting that although Israel will not take part in the strike, it is expecting to be the target of Iranian retribution. Quote, look at Dick Cheney's recent trip through the Middle East as preparation for the U.S. attack. That trip included stops in Israel, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Oman, Turkey, and the Palestinian occupied territories. Meanwhile, Israel was conducting the largest home front military exercises in its history last week, and Israel's National Infrastructure Minister Binyamin Ben Eliezer warned Tehran about expected attacks. An Iranian attack will prompt a severe reaction from Israel, which will destroy the Iranian nation. Destroy the Iranian nation. That means destroy the Iranian people. That means destroy peasants, shopkeepers, goat herders, sheep herders, people working in factories, people working on oil platforms, people in government. Destroy the Iranian nation. All, and this saber rattling comes with no present threat from Iran at all. But we got to keep the pot boiling, don't we? Binyamin Ben Eliezer predicted that in a future war, quote, hundreds of missiles will rain on Israel, but added that Iran is definitely aware of our strength. What he's trying to say is that if the first Iranian bottle rocket lands on Israel, Israel will light up Iran with a series of nuclear strikes. And that just makes the bottom fall out of my guts. And so, I offer this to you not as necessarily as a representation of reality, but as a representation of the fervent hopes and dreams of the right wing. Fascists, both in the United States and in Israel. In addition to long-range missiles Iran has been developing to strike Israel, Israel's military strategists see the Iranians using terror groups they back, like Hamas, operating from Palestine and Hezbollah. Terror. Be afraid. Be very afraid. Israel's recent war exercises, including preparations for chemical and biological weapons attacks, blah, 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 even though there's no evidence of biological or chemical weapons being used on them. Never mind. So this thing goes on and on and on. The Saudi newspaper Okaz disclosed that the Saudi government has approved nuclear fallout preparations. Like I said, it goes on and on and on, and everyone seems to agree that the U.S. attack on Iran will come sometime in May or June. So, we've just got to make it to through May or June. No, we don't have to just make it through May or June. We've got to make it all the way to the day when George Bush, either voluntarily or by force, is dragged kicking and screaming from the White House somewhere around January the 20th, 2009. On the other hand, if he is replaced by John McCain, there's no reason to think that, John McCain wants a war with anybody, just to show that he can do it, yeah, because he's a big, studly man. NBC Associated Press article. Headline, McCain calls for summer gas tax holiday from Memorial Day to Labor Day. Which would, you remember when I mentioned earlier about the idea that I want a country that can take care of its infrastructure, that can build its roads and maintain its roads? Well, the gas tax holiday is a way of making sure that we can't. He wants to suspend the federal gasoline tax throughout the entire summer to knock off about 25 cents on a gallon of gas. Let's see. That would make it where we filled up in suburban D.C. On Sunday, or not suburban D.C., it was on down the road. But anyway, it would make it, it was in the state of Virginia, that would make it about $3 a gallon gasoline. Woohoo! Party on, dude! Road trip! Not so much. John McCain is a crazy, small-minded, something a whole lot less than bright, dangerous man. In addition to just being, you know, wicked. I love language like this. He was talking at Carnegie Mellon University, and why Carnegie Mellon University would want something like John McCain there, I don't know.
In so many ways, we need to make a clean break from the worst excesses of both political parties. Somewhere along the way, too many Republicans in Congress became indistinguishable from big-spending Democrats they used to oppose.
Oh, eat me, John! How many times do the studies have to be done? How many times do the studies have to be verified, re-verified? The tax and spend Democrat is a myth. It didn't exist. It doesn't exist. By and large, when Democrats are in control, government spending is significantly more controlled than in any time period in which Republicans have their feet in the trough. You see how that quote works? He's saying that Republicans, that he's mad and mad, that because the Republicans have become like Democrats and therefore are bad. Republicans haven't become like Democrats. If Republicans had become like Democrats, Republicans would be fiscally sane. They aren't, though. I love the way this article reads. And McCain, who has said economics is not his strongest suit. Suit? Not his strongest suit? Economics is not only John McCain's strongest suit. Economics is not John McCain's worn, thin, threadbare pair of DVDs with racing stripes. Economics and John McCain can't exist on the same side of an equation. It's, you know, one or the other. You can have economics or you can have John McCain. But not both. You know, I think we may have to start referring to John McCain as the home on the range candidate. Because never is heard a discouraging word and the skies are not cloudy all day. Oh, I'm sorry, that wouldn't reduce the price of a gallon of gas from... No, that's diesel. Diesel's about 25 cents on the gallon, federal tax-wise. 18.4 cents is federal gas tax. And that goes to keep up the roads and, you know, make sure that, you know, you don't lose your Prius or your Aspire or, you know, subcompact, that it doesn't go into a pothole and not come out. Some estimates say that the government would lose about, $10 billion in needed revenue for maintaining the highways. And hey, here's a smart idea. He also wants the government to stop buying fuel for the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. You know, I think the way we combat world hunger is to stop eating, too. Also, you see. And the two proposals would reduce gas prices, which would have a, wait for it, here it comes. It's a blast from your past, which would have a trickle-down effect and help spread relief across the American economy. Well, there's something being spread, and it's being spread in this article, but it ain't relief, and it's not on the economy. Oh God. McCain's effort to set his own economic course and court independence comes as the public is craving change. Makes it sound like the American people are a pregnant woman wanting ice cream and pickles at 3 a.m. A craving is something that is irrational or is somehow outside the normal realms of ordinary desire, right? You don't crave a meal. You crave Ben and Jerry's Cherry Garcia ice cream or fish food or New York Super Fudge Chunk or, you know, one of the, that's the kind of stuff you crave. Or shrimp. When she was carrying the babies, Agnes craved shrimp. And I did everything in my power to satisfy those cravings when they hit her. Because it was apparently it's like having a loaded dump truck hitches like, oh, I want shrimp. Oh, now. The public is craving change. The public, what the public desires, what the public fervently wishes, what the public desperately yearns for, is to see George W. Bush exit the White House
forever. But I guess if you work for the Associated Press, you're not allowed to write, you know, that honestly. Shortly before McCain's speech, the Labor Department reported another worrisome sign for the economy. Inflation at the wholesale level soared in March at nearly triple the rate that had been expected, as the costs of energy and food both climbed rapidly. Meanwhile, oil jumped up over $113 a barrel today. Another language thing. Why do we refer to oil jump to... No. Our subsidy of the so-called royal dictatorship in Saudi Arabia jumped to $113 a barrel today. Our subsidy for the country that sent 15 out of 19 of the hijackers into our buildings on September 11th, 2001 jumped to $113 a barrel today. Oh, what else? Let's see. He wants to raise the exemption for each dependent child from $3,500 to $7,000. And he says that he'll offset the losses in revenue for that by cutting federal spending.
Sure, Republican, cut spending. Oh, tell me another one.
He wants more affluent people, couples making more than $164,000, enrolled in Medicare to pay a higher premium for their prescription drugs than less wealthy people. I'm guessing that ain't gonna fly. I mean, how many people are there in the U.S. who are making more than $164,000 who are age 65 and above? So this is just insanity on the part of insane McCain, John McBush, John McCain did it, John McCain-Churian Cain did it. Oh, and of course he lashed out at Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. He said that they would impose the single biggest tax increase since World War II by letting the foolhardy Bush tax cuts expire. That's not a tax increase. That is a return to the normal tax rate. But, you know, that's all just hair splitting, right? But it's not hair splitting, is it? If we note that, I don't know what you call Cindy McCain for this. Plagiarist? Rip-off artist? Less than creative? No, it turns out, you saw this probably. You know, we got a lot of foodies in the audience. And I'm sure more than one of us have been to foodtv.com, the home of the Food Network, where there's a boatload of really interesting recipes if you're feeling curious or, you know, adventuresome. Well, they're gone now. But had you gone, say, yesterday to John McCain's campaign website, you would have found Cindy McCain's recipes. Oh. McCain family recipe. Let's see. A traditional McCain family recipe, ahi tuna with Napa cabbage salad. Or another one, and this one just sounds yummy. I can just imagine the McCain family enjoying these back when John was born on foreign soil. Passion fruit mousse. Or how about farfalla pasta with turkey sausage, peas, and mushrooms?
Those are some traditional McCain family recipes. There's only one problem. They're stolen. Now, I remember when we had a big foo-fraw over whether or not, Barack Obama had the right to use the words of Deval Patrick in one of his speeches, even though Deval Patrick had already told him it was okay to use them. I remember when we had that. And I remember that the Clinton campaign had a blue screaming purple polka-dotted hissy and kittens with crocheted tails over that. But here's John McCain's campaign. In the name of Cindy McCain, you know, the woman that John McCain refers to as a C-word, lifting whole recipes and not even modifying them a little bit to make it look dodgy. No. Just lifting them word for word from the Food Network site. Word for word. And they also snagged a Rachel Ray recipe. How cool is that? And made some minor changes to it. It has taken less than 12 hours for all of those things to be scrubbed from the McCain website. What? Huh? No, that was never up there. We didn't put that. You can't prove we did that. They're all gone. And as noted in the article I'm looking at from David Weiner at Huffington Post, he said that's 12 hours more than it took Cindy to come up with the recipes. And interestingly, and this is the fun part, this isn't isolated. Cindy McCain, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, submitted her passion fruit mousse recipe to the New York Sun for an article that ran back on January 16th. The McCain campaign is blaming it on an intern. The whole thing is a low-level unpaid staff debacle. Really? John McCain campaign lets low-level, unpaid staff put stuff up on the web in the name of Mrs. McCain. That doesn't sound very sharp, does it? How do you have an I don't know. What are they going to do? Blame it on the housekeeper? It was that Lupe. I swear it is so hard to get good help anymore. This guy wants to be president, and he can't even oversee the management of a website. That says a boatload. Senator McCain, do you think we ought to get some recipes just to sort of make your wife look like she's being a good right-wing wife and staying home and cooking for you all the time? Yeah, just dummy something up. Steal something from the Food Network. We'll claim it was a low-level, unpaid staff debacle if we get caught, okay? Sounds about like how it worked, doesn't it? About half past the first hour of the program, let's go to the phones and see what's shaking. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going, Bob? It's Jared.
Hey, Jared, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Did you catch the Daily Show last night about the bitter controversy?
Sadly, no, I didn't. I'm back here producing shows about that time, but I take it you did?
They got it up on Democratic Underground, the clip of Jon Stewart basically just using Hillary's own words and actions to just rip into her.
Well, I think it's called for on that one.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she was, you know, kind of underestimating what it is us, the commoners, go through. You know, I recently lost my factory job because they had to put it in Mexico.
Gee, wonder why it went to Mexico.
Yeah, me too.
Could it have anything to do with NAFTA?
Yeah. Something has to do with five letters. NAFTA? Nah, it couldn't be that.
And we got NAFTA where?
Mars.
Bush administration? Reagan administration?
Clinton's.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I mean, look, like them or hate them, they can't run away from the fact that they were the primary proponents of NAFTA. George H.W. Bush wanted it, and Bill Clinton followed up by saying, I think it's neater than sliced bread. We need NAFTA. And bang, we got it, and we start hemorrhaging jobs.
Yeah. And, I mean, we're hemorrhaging everywhere. White collar, blue collar, north, south, east, west. Today, LexisNexis, you know, the really...
The humongous four-pay search...
They got a big office structure here in Dayton, and they're going to lay off 250 jobs.
Yeah, Jiminy.
I mean, and it's one hit after another. National City, Ohio's biggest bank, decided they're going to send jobs overseas to India.
And there's nothing to keep them from doing it.
Yeah. Turn around like a bunch of jackasses and look at us like, what is the economy bad? Why is the economy bad? Well, generally, consumers are also workers. In order for the workers to consume, they need the work. You see the correlation?
Yeah, oddly enough, I do.
Yeah. Apparently, they slept through a micro, macro, and about every economics class they ever took.
Yeah, including economics for dummies.
Yeah.
And John McCain was right there in the front row of that one.
You know, I don't have a Harvard MBA. I'm working on a social science ed bachelor degree at Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio. But, you know.
Good school.
Taught me enough that, gee, people need to have jobs in order for it to be an economy. Because consumers are also workers. They're not independent of each other.
I get it. You get it. I don't know why they don't get it. Now, to be completely straight up on this, I had a conversation earlier today, and the one part of the Barack Obama quote about people clinging to stuff, you know, guns and religion, yada, 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 there's one phrase in there that kind of bugs me, and that's anti-trade sentiments.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's against trade. I don't think we want to become like Japan was in the 17th and early 18th century, but, you know, we want fair trade, not, you know, let's make Milton Friedman richer trade.
Precisely. And,
you know,
but it, I think it sort of missed the point for him to say they cling to anti-trade sentiments. You know, it's not an anti-trade sentiment if you resent the fact that one day you have a job and the next day your job is in Taiwan.
Yeah.
That's not irrational.
You know, I'm not an isolationist by any stretch of the imagination. Good Lord, the amount of coffee and tea I drink.
Yeah, and until we can grow it here, which we can't. There's only one state in the U.S. that grows coffee, and that's Hawaii.
Yeah,
we're going to have to engage in trade. But the Jared, there's a common sense line somewhere. I mean, if we are having, say, Converse Chuck Taylor sneakers made in India or Bangladesh and shipped all the way halfway around the globe and then put on a semi-tractor trailer and driven to your local Wally World or Shoe Barn or wherever it is you buy them, there's something fundamentally wrong with that from an economic standpoint. How can it possibly be cheaper to do that than it would be to have American workers making shoes for American people?
True. I mean, and a part of the reason why we're in this economic mess is, you know, not to bash on you, but mainly the fault of the baby boomers and the fact that they thought that trickle-down economics was the greatest thing ever.
Well, they were idiots. And
yeah.
I don't know how you hear something like hear something like trickle-down economics, and, oh, that's going to work for me. I can't wait to get my drip.
Yeah. You're going to pee on me? Great. I mean, because basically trickle-down economics is in this really hard right vision that even Adam Smith wouldn't even recognize. That Adam Smith sort of alluded to, but, you know, sort of backtracked on later on about the mythical hand of the market. Basically, the magical, invisible hand of the market will make everything better.
But the market, the free market that these people talk about, Jared, isn't a free market. It's a managed market. It has simply been managed for the benefit of a very minuscule few and to the detriment of a vast majority.
Yeah, and any economist worth his salt, and not some of these screaming heads they got on MSNBC, on CNBC and whatnot, will tell you that. They'll tell you that Keynes was right. That Keynes was right about economics and the fact that Adam Smith and Karl Marx have two things in common. One, they're two ideologists, and two, both of their systems are impractical.
Right, because they are their systems that are conceived in a vacuum.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure in a vacuum it'd work, but in real world practices it doesn't. You know, let's take capital. Capitalists will look to insure their investments, and that means limiting the market. That means putting competitors out of business,
which leads to monopoly, which then leads to basically that's I've always sort of seen this, and I've wondered at the fact that a lot of people don't. If you let free market capitalism have its sway, its natural progress is not to foster more business, but to shut business down via predation, and then bang, you wind up with a mono economy, which is what basically Karl Marx was talking about.
Yeah, and basically look what Britain had to do during the Industrial Revolution when they had a laissez-faire economy. They had to colonize Africa to get resources, for crying out loud.
Yeah, endless capitalism and endless consumption is fundamentally flawed because it presumes endlessness. It presumes that all of this is taking place in some sort of infinite world, worlds without end.
Which goes back to the definition of economy. An economy is figuring out how to distribute a limited amount of resources to fill people's unwanted needs. They seem to forget that part about economics.
And as a consequence, let me ask you a question, Jared.
Yeah.
Can the American people be talked to in straight terms like what you and I are discussing right now? Is it possible to look at a guy who's worried to death about his shotgun and tell him that his shotgun is the least of his worries, that we are living in an economic funhouse that cannot stand for a lot longer? Or, because it seems to me that if you say something like that to America, generally what you get back, at least through the megaphone of the so-called professional media, is that, wow, that's on American.
Yeah. You know, that's it's part of a problem. You know, I'm a gun owner myself.
Well, so am I. I mean, you know.
You know, I'm this winter I'm going to go deer hunting again this year. It's a yearly tradition for me.
Sure.
Get me some venison, have a good time.
And you're in Ohio, so you can't use rifle guns, right?
Yes and no. We have like a week of gun season. I generally use an 1100 semi-automatic shotgun with a bore barrel on it.
Okay.
It can only hold three shells.
Right, but
by state law.
But you could use something like a punkin ball in a bored shotgun barrel and at least get, you know, 100-yard range, that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, see, that's one of the things that makes deer hunting a little bit more interesting here in the hills is that, you know, if you've got a howitzer, you can use it during deer season, at least during rifle gun season.
Yeah,
the 300 mag, you know, 300 Winchester mag, 300 Weatherby mag, 7mm mag, 30-06, 30-30, 270, 708, you know, whatever. Anything goes.
Oh, yeah. back to that situation, I always told people, you know, never try to get between a white man and his gun. Because, I mean, you could take away his kids, his house, his wife, but for some reason they hold on to that gun like it's a part of their anatomy.
In many ways, it is not so much a part of the white male anatomy, but an extension thereof, Jared, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I know a lot of guys that way, and again, this is not about being anti-gun.
No.
But, you know, I caught myself saying something that I thought was kind of profound last night. Here in America, we talk about our religion, but we worship our guns.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I mean, you know. And now the dangerous thing is now we're starting to get groups of people where you're combining religious fundamentalism with massive gun ownership. And that's always been a recipe for disaster.
It has, and frankly, there's been more overall danger to gun ownership rights under the Bush administration than under the any Democratic administration combined.
Yeah. Gun control has always been sort of one of those election year issues. It was sort of like that in the 80s.
And, you know, I gotta ask you about that, Jared. We've done a pretty good job so far through this election season with that not rearing its ugly head.
Yeah.
Until all of a sudden Hillary Clinton raises it in Pennsylvania, and now it's all about guns again.
And not only that, she's, like, there's, like, NRA targets out there, and I know they're out there. I haven't seen them, but I just know they're out there, of bullseyes focusing on her head. And she's talking about this like she's going to win these people over. And not only that, it sort of backfired on her because when she brought it up at one of those speeches yesterday about the bitterness, people started yelling, no!
Yeah, that was in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, in Pittsburgh. And you know, now Barack Obama, you know, he probably could have worded it, phrased, but what he said was 110% of the truth. People in this country are damn bitter, and I've been telling them for years, instead of sitting at home polishing your guns and holding on to stuff that you think you can count on, damn it, you got to take the streets.
That's why I asked the opening question that I asked. Can we talk straight with America? You know, can you say to them, you know, you can have a chest full of guns, but if there's nothing left to hunt because the environment's been degraded by Republican policies, what do you got?
Unless you speak to them like adults, and that's what politicians haven't done. Well, I was born in 1980, and I've never seen them do it. You know, the closest I've ever seen a politician talk to somebody like an adult was when Obama talked about race.
Yeah.
And
yeah, because the rest of it's all mourning in America.
Yeah, it's mourning in America. It's phrase words. It's marketing. It's
Willie Horton,
rosy cheeks, smear ads, you name it. Fear and more fear.
And,
you know, fear, rationality, all that good stuff.
I think we're getting to a place, though, that we have to have a serious conversation. This is obviously one. We're trying to foster that stuff on a person-to-person, you know, radio level. But the politicians have got to learn to talk straight.
Oh, yeah.
And so far, I don't hear a whole lot of it. I think Obama was trying to do a little bit of that. And of course, it was leapt on like a duck on a June bug.
Oh yeah, and you know he sort of apologized to it, but it didn't expand onto it. You see, I think him and that Annie Oakley remark, that's really going to work well.
I love the I love the image of Hillary in the duck blind every weekend.
Oh yeah, her in the pants.
You know, stringing out her little decoys.
Yeah.
Well, there's a metaphor we can work with too. Hillary Clinton stringing out her little decoys.
Make them deaf with the flat A's.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that one almost slid past me. That was good. So, you know, John McCain, would you, I mean, who wouldn't be glad to see gas go down permanently by 18 cents for 3 months? But what happens at the end of the 3 months? At what point does the government recoup those tax losses?
Yeah, that's another thing. I think we're starting to realize that we're starting to grow up a little bit in the fact that we realize governments need taxes in order to give us stuff that we need, like police, schools, roads that aren't so potholed that you need a friggin' new shocks every 6 months.
And you know, that's where the free market, the so-called free market, can't possibly begin to address our needs.
Yeah.
You know, we basically pay taxes because we as a nation understand that we need this stuff.
Oh, yeah. You know, we need mental hospitals. We need schools. We need hospitals in general, for crying out loud.
We need health care.
We need national defense.
Yeah. And no individual can provide that for him or herself. So, you know, that sort of that lets the libertarians out of the debate.
Yeah.
And,
you know, because I, like recently in like Ohio in 2000, Bob Schaff Taft, our worst governor ever, deregulated utilities. And I said, this is a stupid friggin' idea, because utility markets are by nature monopolies.
Right.
Because you can't have choice in a utility market. It's impossible. You'd have to run separate electric lines. And if you did, good Lord, it's a friggin' cancer zone.
And is it precisely?
But everybody's like, no, you don't understand. You know, somebody will eventually come along. Again, and we go to that invisible hand thing. You know, the white rider will ride in out of the west and he'll make everything right. What in the hell are you people talking about?
What in the hell are you people smoking? You know, yeah.
John Wayne isn't even John Wayne. It's all make-believe. They just did it to sell you on it, moron.
Yep.
You know how funny John Wayne was? John Wayne didn't even have his own hair. And he didn't even have an authentic fake wig. He paid somebody else to cut his hair off and to have it make it for a wig for him. You know, the Duke is a lie. The only thing the Duke was a two-bit college football player for USC.
That's true. That is
with moderately interesting acting skills.
Marion Michael Morrison.
Yep. I could think of. There's probably a dozen actors that were better than him in that time. Yul Brynner, the guy that played Kojak.
Telly Savalas, sure. Made a fortune being the rugged independent. I mean, I remember True Grit, and I love that movie. And Brewster Cogburn with the fill your hands, you son of a bitch. You know,
and that's
all a brilliant piece of our self-created mythology, but it's mythology.
Yeah.
And in many ways, those of us who point that kind of thing out, Jared, face the same sort of public disdain that Socrates did when he started saying things. You know, when he was accused of corrupting the youth.
Yeah.
Because, nothing is more sacred to a people than the stuff that isn't real. And that's what I'm trying to get at with all of this, is that, you know, we have real problems.
Oh, okay.
And we are we are clinging to religion, and we are, clinging to fundamentalism, clinging to stuff that can't save us.
Yeah, I've been saying the Democrats for a long time need to stop using words like religion when they're talking about religious extremists in this country and start using the word fundamentalism.
Exactly.
You know, religion, people think, oh, they're going to come after my little Presbyterian church. Fundamentalism, oh, they're going to go after those snake-handling crazies in that megachurch.
Yes.
You know, or for God's sakes, that one in Texas, they had an undercover cop in there for 4 years, and they sat on it until the media finally pressed them to do something about it.
Yeah, because, well, you know, you can't have another one of those going down in Texas.
Yeah.
Because, see, that would... See, all of this works against the right-wing meme because, well, you know, Bill Clinton attacked poor little children in Waco and Janet Reno burned babies alive.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't work if you're talking about the same thing being done by a Republican.
Oh, yeah.
So that's, you know, so yeah, that's why they sat on it.
Yeah. Apparently, police don't have the tact gene anymore. You know, they can't figure out how to arrest anybody anymore without coming with a friggin' M16 on rock and roll, ready to shoot the friggin'
But the Supreme Court set all that up, Jared.
Oh, yeah.
Because that ruling that said they don't have to knock with a warrant anymore, they can just bust through the door and crush the little toddler crawling on the floor, they can just crush the baby to death going through the floor, and it's going through the door, and it's no harm, no foul.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it's all part of a piece. All of this stuff. You know, you want another justice on the Supreme Court that's going to think the same way as the so-called logic, the pathetic logic that yielded that decision? Go ahead, put John McCain in office. You'll get that judge. You may get two of them. You might get three. You get two, the party's over.
Yeah. And I wonder when these people, when these right-wing authoritarians will eventually realize that somebody will eventually break and push back. And when they do, it's going to get ugly.
Well, so far there's been no break and there's been no pushback because, you know, the Dancing with the Idols is out there.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, there's something for everybody on the Electric Miracle Box.
Yeah. But, you know, one of these days they're going to piss on somebody's hornet nest and they ain't going to like it.
That's another thing though about the litany of stuff that we cling to. Why was there no mention of television?
Yeah.
Why was there no mention of the single most pernicious, and I include religion in that list, the single most pernicious destroyer of culture is television.
Oh, yeah.
That needed to be in the list. In fact, he could have replaced guns or religion with television. Or he could have said, you know, televangelists, then that would have worked nicely. Yeah, all of that.
Yeah, but, you know, for the most part, he's right. You know, I come from a small community, and, you know, people hold onto their guns like it's an oxygen tank, and they're in space, for crying out loud. And, you know, they vote their guns. Oh, my gun, my gun, my gun. You know, nobody's going to take your friggin' gun away.
I'm sitting here in the studio within eyesight of two.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just because that's where we keep them, because they're safe.
You know, no politician's that friggin' stupid to even try it. You know, the most...
Well, why would you want to fight that fight?
Yeah. The most, quote-unquote, anti-gun president we ever had was Clinton. The only thing he did was take what are they called? The ends of the barrel for semi-automatic rifles.
Oh, muzzle brakes?
Yeah, muzzle brakes that depress the fire.
Yeah.
That's the only thing he did.
And, well, and the like, 100-round capacity banana clips, those went
through. Yeah, that's the only thing he did.
Because you know what? If you can't hit Bambi with round one, or at least round two, round 100 ain't going to get him.
Yeah. You can't hit him through the first 99 tries.
The first day of rifle season in West Virginia is all. It sounds like a war around here, and you know you can tell just by listening. You know, you can sort of identify one gun from a different gun, and you'll hear a guy sitting there with, and you know he's got a semi-auto 30-06 or something like that.
Oh yeah.
And you hear blam 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 blam. and you know that he just missed
every
round.
Because muzzle loaders and shotguns.
Yeah.
Those are the two biggest ones in Ohio.
Oh, see, I will not go turkey hunting in this state because we allow rifle guns in spring gobbler season. And crazy people go into the woods with all the, you know, about this time of year, with all the new foliage on the trees, and they're looking for anything that even looks like a speck of red, and I don't care if it has a hen call or a gobble, or they shoot at it.
Yeah.
With a rifle gun. Yeah, I mean, you ever see these things are kind of fascinating. The over and under combo firearms, it'll be like a 222 or a 22 mag on top and a 12 gauge shotgun on the bottom.
No, I haven't.
Oh yeah, those are a trip.
Oh, I bet they are. Our big problem is now hunting wise is coyotes.
Yeah.
I think they just recently made an open season on them.
We've had an open season on coyotes in West Virginia for years now.
Yeah, well, our idiots in the state legislature wanted to lower a deer population, so they put coyotes back in the circulation. You know, they'd eat some deer, but they'd also eat chickens and livestock.
Right.
And that ticked off a lot of farmers. And they also
breed with the stray dog population.
Yeah.
And when you breed a stray dog to a coyote, you don't get another stray dog. You get another coyote. Actually, you get six or eight of them.
Yeah. So now we got coyote problems, and you know I couldn't tell you how many times I've been at my parents' house at night, and I just hear them calling. It sounds like they're 10 feet away from me.
And you know what? It'll make your blood run cold too.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, a coyote's a scraggly dog, and, you know, if it saw me, it'd probably be more terrified of me than I was of it. But still, you just don't like them out there.
Oh, I remember when the West Virginia Department of Natural Resources got so frustrated because the people of this state knew that the DNR had introduced coyotes to cut down on the deer population. Because, you know, the coyotes were west-moving, and we're bounded on the west by rivers. And I'm not talking about little things that run dry in summer. We're talking about the Ohio River.
Yeah.
So what, the entire coyote population walked across on the bridge at Parkersburg? I don't think so.
They got off on I-75.
Yeah, well, that's what it was. Yeah, they just wandered. No, they wandered down I-77, and, you know, that's all there. Yeah. The DNR got mad because, you know, they got figured out. And so now we've got a coyote problem, and yeah, it's for people who raise livestock, it's a problem, whether it be sheepers, cattlemen, people raising chickens, whatever.
Cattlemen don't really have a problem with them if the mother of calves are very protective.
Well, you know, I read a thing the other day. One of the things that makes a big difference is putting humans to work. And this kind of brings us full circle again.
Yeah.
If you've got actual human beings tending livestock in the field, out west, wolf and coyote problems go down dramatically.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah.
You know, again, you put an American to work.
Yeah, no kidding.
But we've forgotten about all of that, and yeah, you know, whether it's shoes or T-shirts or screws. Or, I mean, anything you want. We have people that would be willing to work making them.
Yeah. You know, but no, we got to try and see if we can make Ray Knight 5 more cents on a Nike stock share.
Precisely.
Next quarter.
Yeah.
You know, that's the most important thing.
Yeah, the quarterly profit and loss statement.
You know.
This isn't about American jobs. It's not about the well-being of the country. Even the business, Jared, with the gas tax, it would not bother me in the least if we completely eliminated the federal gas tax because, among other things, the federal gas tax is, first and foremost, a regressive tax. That means poor people pay more of it as a percentage of their income than the wealthy do.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, what's wrong with going back to a progressive income tax where those with greater means pay greater money?
Well, you know, that reminds them of Marxism. Although they couldn't find a communist if Karl Marx rose from the grave and hit him on the ass. But, you know, it reminds them of him.
So does that mean that everybody was communist when the progressive income tax was first introduced?
Yep, that's it.
Yeah, that was back when the red, white, and blue was all red. And instead of the stars, we had a big hammer and sickle. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, big hammer.
Let's see, 1913, that would be William Howard Taft, wouldn't it?
Yeah, one of Ohio's fattest.
Yeah, and he was a communist? I'll be damned.
Yeah, Republican communist. I never thought I'd live to see today.
Yeah, but it gets a little more believable every day, doesn't it?
Yeah, that sounds almost strange, but this is true. When I was working at TSC and I saw some guy pull up in a Kia with one of those stars and bars Confederate flag bumper sticker plates, you know, the South will rise again, on a Kia.
Oh, that's charming.
I said, I'm going home. I've seen everything I'm going to see for today. You can't top that.
Yeah, that's the one where you just, you know, get in the car, drive home, and Ethel, throw me a beer.
Yeah, put on Dark Side of the Moon. It'll sync up.
All right. Well, Jared, good to hear from you. Don't be a stranger.
Easy,
thanks for all your thoughts. I appreciate it. And yeah, no, you weren't gooning on me. I'm the tail end of the baby boomer, so.
My dad is too. 1955.
Okay, so yeah, you get it. All right, take care, my friend, and best of luck with the studies.
I sure will.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
My buddy Jared calling from Ohio. Well, there went the hour. So we'll come back and do a little bit more, and there's a lot more out there. Anything you want to talk about is on the table, as the saying goes, because after all, this is America's liberal voice. This is the Horn. We'll be back.
This isn't Alabama, Ohio, well, I know. I'm in central Germany, where I love to go. Then how come I am seeing right in front of me? My Lord, there flies a rebel flag in central Germany. My Lord, there flies a rebel flag in central Germany. Mercy.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
I love that song. I love that album. Jason Ringenberg from Empire Builder. Rebel Flag in Central Germany. You get the feeling listening to that. But that's a true story, don't you? Just has the air of truth about it. Oh, let's see. Speaking of rebel flags and things like that, the Republican Party being, you know, what Republicans are. A little story that I brought up on the horn section last night, but if you weren't listening, it bears repeating. In the midst of all the foo-frah over what Barack Obama said or didn't say, a Kentucky congressman from the Commonwealth on Saturday night offered some opinions to the repiglic and faithful in Kentucky at a clavern gathering, or whatever you call it when repiglicans get together. It was the state, I guess they call it their Lincoln Day dinner. Democrats call theirs the Jefferson Jackson Day dinner, and every state has them. And Congressman Jeff Davis, appropriately named, one might add, was talking about Barack Obama. And he said, and this is a quote, after referring to Senator Obama as a snake oil salesman and claiming that he had participated in, quote, a highly classified national security simulation with Senator Obama, said the following, quote, I'm going to tell you something. That boy's finger does not need to be on the button. He could not make a decision in that simulation that related to nuclear threats to this country. That boy's finger. Well, Congressman Davis has apologized. He wrote a letter to Senator Obama and said, my poor choice of words is regrettable and was in no way meant to impugn you or your integrity, only your race. No, that part's mine. Was no way meant to impugn your integrity or you or your integrity. I offer my sincere apology to you and ask you for your forgiveness. My comment in no way reflects the personal and professional respect I have for you. Yeah, we can tell about the personal and professional respect you have for him. Congressman Davis, you called an African American man boy. But what do you want? He's a repiglican. How many times do we have to point out these stories? This is what they are. This is how they are. Repiglicans and the Repiglican National Committee, the Repiglican anything and everything, is a gang of unrepentant, unreconstructed racists. Because, among other things, when the Democratic Party split over civil rights, the racists largely left and were welcomed with open arms by the Republican Party, and that's how the South got us in the mess that we are in today, by blindly following Republicans, who are racists. Now, the best part of this story is what I'm... the version that I'm seeing over at Chicken Noodle News. Headline: GOP Congressman apologizes to Obama for snake oil remark. No, really. Am I to understand now that even the editorial honchos for CNN.com don't understand that the gravamen of the objection is referring to a full-grown African-American male as boy? It's not about the snake oil salesman part. Although that's reprehensible, it's the boy part. Because that is a freighted phrase when used by a, let's see, wonder if he'd object to this, cracker like Jeff Davis. But that, you know, I guess you can't be too hard on Jeff Davis, because Jeff Davis doesn't have any problem with using demeaning language toward people of darker skin color, because that's the world that Jeff Davis lives in. Darker-skinned people, whether they be Mexicans, African-Americans, Indonesians, Haitians, Ecuadorians, Salvadorans, exist to serve him and his class. Obama's campaign responded after hearing that Congressman Davis had referred to the senator as boy. It's hard to tell what's more outrageous, Representative Davis's condescending and personal attack, or his absurd and offensive claim that Barack Obama is not prepared to defend America. This one's easy for me. But maybe that's because, unlike any other liberal talker in America, I'm a Southerner. I just am. And I get it. I know what Jeff Davis was talking about, and I know who he was talking to. I guarantee you, at that state party dinner Saturday night, you could have put every African-American heritaged individual into a phone booth that was there. Could have put them in a phone booth and still had room enough to get in and make a phone call. Because the Republican Party is, for the vast most part, a whites-only club. You know, don't let the sun set on you here, that kind of stuff. They like tokens. They like to have, well, let's see, J.C. Watts, congressman from Oklahoma. They like to trot him out every now and then. And they love to point to Clarence Thomas. And there's a couple of others, you know, Alan Keyes. But for the most part, there just aren't a whole lot of African-American Republicans. Because as J.C. Watts' own father said, a black man voting for a Republican is like a chicken voting for Colonel Sanders. That was J.C. Watts' daddy. That's not me. Interestingly, he answered that question in response to a query as to whether he would vote for his own son for Congress. Really. Now, the upside of this, if there are listeners in Kentucky or listeners in particular in Congressman Davis's district, wear him out with it. Because he not only, you know, Kentucky also has a primary coming. And he not only has a strong Democratic challenger, a physician, he's got two or three Republican challengers. It's possible Kentucky could ditch Congressman Jeff Boy Davis before a Democrat even has to face him. And you know what? I'd feel a lot better about Kentucky if they did. I mean, for heaven's sakes, the guy writes a letter and says, poor choice of words is regrettable and no way meant to impugn you or your integrity. It wasn't an impugning of Obama or his integrity. It was a racist remark, Jeff. But you see, that's how far down the rabbit hole these right-wing, unrepentant, unreconstructed racists are. They don't recognize racial slurs when they make them every blessed day. I'm going to tell you something. That boy's finger does not need to be on the button. And you, sir, do not need to be in the Congress. Take your white pride and your white supremacy and go over to the Klan meeting where you belong, you old freak. This is the 21st century, Congressman Davis, and we don't need the likes of you anymore. We don't need the divisiveness of the Repig-Lickin' Party. We, the people of the United States, black, brown, yellow, green, red, white, and whatnot, are standing on a cliff, Congressman Davis. And we are staring into the abyss. And Congressman Davis, the abyss, is staring back. And we don't need you shoving from behind. If America is to recover from the horrific damage of 8 long, miserable years of the Bush administration, the damage of illegal wars and illegal occupations and illegal dummied-up stock trading and tax dodges and corporate predation and outsourcing of jobs, and the absolute destruction of the American family structure, if we are to heal from that, Jeff Davis, you have got to get out of the way. Because with the likes of you in the Congress, Jeff Davis, we are doomed. Because your only answer is to divide us further from each other. When we are called upon for a level of national unity right now that we have not seen since the days, the darkest early days of World War II, we must stand together in this country, Jeff Davis, or we will hang separately. And that, I suppose, is ultimately the question. Do they want us to hang? And it's hard to see where they don't. It's hard to see where they don't. I admit I don't have, I guess, the profound cerebral qualities required to figure out how the Republicans benefit by destroying the nation where they live? Well, yeah, maybe I do. As my daddy always told me, the Republican Party's sole goal in life is to create a two-class society. Because Dad was one of, well, he was the first in his family. The first generation, not the first of his family, but the first of his generation. His generation was the first. I'm going to get this right yet. His generation was the first to rise into the middle class and to benefit from a growing middle class in this country. So he could look back not very far and see where the Republican Party wanted to go. And that's why being a member of a union meant so much to him. That's why he regretted it for the rest of his days when he went salary and went into management. Worst mistake I ever made in my life, I heard him say on more occasions than I can count. But he could see the resentment of the Republican Party for the rise of the middle class, because it made him have to work harder to keep America divided against itself. It made them have to come up with phony baloney the BS arguments about Bibles and guns and sex and all the stuff that until then Americans had largely kept a matter of personal, familial piety and privacy. But because it was necessary to scare the ignorant, the Republican Party did everything in its power via red baiting. I mean, it was only last night on this program that we played a soundbite of Joe Lieberman red baiting against Barack Obama. All of those vile tactics go back to the Republican Party. The red baiting, the sex baiting. Did you ever smoke marijuana? The drug baiting. The wife baiting. Every last piece of filthy politics that has done harm to this country for the last 100 years, if you research it, you will find has its cradle in the heart of a nursery that is facilitated and fully funded and maintained by the Republican Party of America. Richard M. Nixon fired the opening salvos in the war on organized labor. Ronald Reagan got out a knife and slit the throats of America's wounded labor force as they lay waiting for relief on the ground. And George W. Bush has told America that they'd best not be engaging in that labor talk no more, or else it'd get worse.
We'll get your children this time.
So while it's easy to focus on the likes of Jeff Davis, we are far better off understanding why Jeff Davis is the way he is, why he feels like it's okay to stand up in the Kentucky Lincoln Day dinner this past Saturday night and say, "I'm gonna tell you something. That boy's finger does not need to be on the button, that boy." Easy to focus on him and what a rotten human being he is. Far more difficult, however, and yet far more satisfying and far more edifying for us to examine the culture in which a Jeff Davis arises. And it is a culture, and it is a pattern, and it is a practice. Because, among other things, the National Republican Congressional Committee has been playing a little bit of footsie, shall we say, with white supremacists in Mississippi and Louisiana. Well, I'll be danged. Is there anybody here who's surprised at that? I'm not. Mississippi and Louisiana are having a pair of special elections for the House of Representatives. And both of the candidates, backed by the National Republican Congressional Committee, have been fooling around with the white supremacists. In Mississippi, the case concerns a mayor who had once agreed to accept a gift to his city from a white supremacist group. South Haven Mayor Greg Davis, again with the Davises, agreed in 2001, you know, 21st century, to accept a plaque on behalf of the city of South Haven as a gift from the Council of Conservative Citizens. If you're not familiar, in the Deep South, the Council of Conservative Citizens, of which, among others, Trent Lott is and has been a member. Council of Conservative Citizens is basically the Klan with suits and ties. The Council of Conservative Citizens is a white supremacist organization that wanted to thank the town of South Haven for flying the state flag of Mississippi in the midst of a controversy over the flag's Confederate emblems. And Davis did, in fact, initially defend accepting the plaque from the CCC. By virtue of public pressure, he eventually refused the plaque, by the way. The Democratic challenger is Prentiss County, Mississippi clerk Travis Childers, and one hopes that Travis Childers will beat him over the head with the plaque. Meanwhile, over in Louisiana, former state representative Woody Jenkins had a 1996 campaign for the U.S. Senate, and he paid $82,500 to a phone banking firm that, lo and behold, bought its phone banking phone numbers from none other than David Duke. Really? In fact, Duke personally recommended the phone firm to Jenkins. And when it became public, he tried to hide the payments when it became, you know, impossible to hide the Duke connection. So, it's just another day in the GOP. It's just another day at the office for the political arm of the KKK. Remember how they always used to describe Sinn Féin as the political arm of the IRA during the Troubles in Northern Ireland? Well, the Republican Party is the political arm of the KKK in the Deep South. Sorry, it's just true. But we'll move on. You want to get involved in the conversation, I assume that you know how to reach the program. 877-443-2366. That's the toll-free number. 304-658-3333. If you've got an unlimited long-distance dialing program and you want to save us a nickel or a buck, we'd appreciate it. Either way, though, we answer the phone. And I love the conversations that happen when we do that. So, I don't know. Let's see. A couple of things that have been banging around. Did you catch the Malto meal recall? Yeah. We are so screwed up in this country, we can't get children's breakfast cereal right anymore. At least 23 people, 14 states, sickened by the same strain of salmonella found in two Malto meal breakfast cereals, puffed rice and puffed wheat. The affected bags were produced in the past 12 months in Northfield, Minnesota. Salmonella can make you sick. Salmonella can make you dead. Minnesota Department of Agriculture's director of the Dairy and Food Inspection Division, Heidi Kassenberg, said that Malto Meal has been extremely cooperative in the investigation and has done the right thing to protect the public's health by recalling the bum cereal. Let's see. How far around the country did the cereal get by virtue of our corporatized food production process? Well, the recalled products were distributed nationally under the Malto Meal brand name. They were also distributed as private labels, including Acme. Oh, God, Acme. You just knew. I've got this mental image of Wile E. Coyote sitting in his cave, you know, bent double with gut cramps. America's Choice, Food Club, Giant, Hannaford, Jewel, Laura Lynn, Pathmark, Shaw's, ShopRite, Tops, and Weiss Quality. The best, if used by dating on the packages, dates from April 8th, 2008 through March 18th, 2009. Amazing. 21 people reported ill with the same salmonella strain in California, Colorado, Delaware, Maine, Massachusetts, Minnesota, North Dakota, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, and Vermont. Let's see. So we add children's breakfast cereal to the list of stuff America can't make without screwing up. That now includes green beans, hamburgers, spinach. Let's see, green onions, tomatoes. All manner of pre-cooked foods involving beef, like, you know, beef stew, beef. Chili sauce for your kids' hot dogs. You know what? It's not the American workers who can't do it without screwing up. It's the financial types who never lose their jobs. Their jobs never go overseas. They go back to the gated community, and if some poor schlub drops dead from salmonella or E. coli, well, you just pick up the phone and call the insurance company, notify the carrier, and then the insurance company can sort of drag their feet and wait and string it out, and eventually, you know, people die, they give up the claim, sometimes they lose in court, and you know what? It's no big deal for corporate America. Let's go to the phones. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey.
What's up?
Another day in another day in paradise.
You're depressing me, man. I eat that cereal.
Dude, I wouldn't anymore. At least I'd check the bag.
Well, you know, when gas is when gas is going almost $3.50 a freaking gallon anymore. I get the cheap stuff, man.
Hey, you know what? It's cheaper to put gas on your Malto meal than it is to put milk on it now. And you know what? The gas might kill the salmonella.
That is true. I actually wanted to talk about something else. I was kind of encouraged in the chat room to bring the subject up.
Sure.
You know what I'm waiting? You know what I'm waiting for in this country? The day I pull up to a McDonald's, order a double cheeseburger, and the person asks for my social security number so they can run a credit check before they can sell me the burger.
That day's coming.
It's like,
look, you can go to McDonald's and you can use a credit card. It's right there, the little swipey hickey. You can use a credit card to buy a hamburger at McDonald's now.
Oh, I know, but I mean, I'm just saying, but the point I'm getting at is it's getting to the point where, you know, I'm not waiting for the day that I can use a credit card to buy a hamburger. That day's already been here. It has been. I'm waiting for the day that they run a credit check on me before they fire the, before they sell me the hamburger. For the day that they go, sir, can I have your social security number? Sir, I'm sorry, but your credit score does not allow us to serve you a 99-cent double cheeseburger, sir. I'm serious.
No, I know.
You can, however, have the bargain menu fries and an apple pie. I'm sorry, we cannot sell you a Big Mac today.
Yeah, it's only on beef. You gotta have the credit card. You gotta have the good credit to buy beef products. I mean, I'm sure. Okay, this is just something else. You know, I'm sitting here and I'm trying to get another job right now. Right now, I work in, you know, I push fertilizer for, you know, my living right now. And let me tell you, Bob, in the middle of in South Georgia, that sucks.
Oh, I'll bet you. No, I won't bet you. I wouldn't take the bet. Yeah, I know that sucks.
So I'm trying to get out of here before the summer really hits, and I'm trying to get a job at a local at a telecom company. I will not name the company for obvious reasons. But they've got a call center here near here, and I'm trying to get in there because, you know, they've got all the benefits and everything. And you know, let's face it, I'm pretty much at the top end of my ability to advance. Well, forgive me, I'm a little caffeinated right now.
That's okay.
I'm about at the top end for where I can advance. You know, unless the guy who owns the company wants to sell it to me, or my boss quits or dies, or I pretty much hit the top end of where I can ascend to on the corporate ladder where I work right now. And I don't want my boss's job. So, and I sure as heck don't want to own that particular company. So anyways, I'm just trying to get somewhere where, you know, I can, you know, maybe get someplace. Maybe it's just my foot in the door, but, you know, it's a big company. Maybe they've got something in terms of, you know, some tuition help and whatnot. A lot of big companies do that sort of thing. So I'm applying for the company and everything. And it's going good, man. They've already had me in for the first interview. I did the pre-qualification testing and everything. And I mean, I like made like three times what the minimum score was for the, that you got to make the job. I mean, I blew the test out of the water. They're all excited to have me and everything. And now I find out though that they're going to run a background check on me. Okay, fair enough. But that background check also includes they're going to run my consumer credit report.
Right. Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong. If this was a bank, or if I was handling money or doing something sensitive, I could kind of understand this.
Well, but you just opened the door on something very significant, Vince, and that is this: when you see that kind of thing, we have to acknowledge that one's credit history is now equated with one's criminal record. In other words,
yeah.
If you're in this country now, if you're a day late with the power with the power bill, it's the same as being a criminal. You see what I'm saying?
Employment and whatnot. Yeah, for the most part, you're right. It will not necessarily bar you from employment, but you know, as a saying on the forums go.
Something's happened to your voice there, Vince.
Hello.
Yeah, that's a lot better.
Okay, so sorry.
That's all right.
Don't know what that was about. My computer, I call over Skype, and my computer's been acting a little funny today.
Packet passing. Probably it's the NSA.
Yeah, must be. It's the NSA listening in on us. I can expect a knock on my door tomorrow.
Yeah, a guy in a black suit with a thin black tie and no sense of humor.
There you go. But, I mean, it's just, you know, there are people that I know who don't want to get into debt. So they don't. They take cash for everything. They do it the old-fashioned way. They save up money for what they need and everything. And, you know, they say, you know, I'm going to save up the money to do this, and then I'm going to buy it. And I'll just get along in the meantime. I know people who do that. And I know a guy who was a friend of mine was doing that. And then he moved out of his parents' house and everything. Because he was trying to go to school and whatnot, and he was paying for the school himself and everything. He was living with his parents until about the time he was 24, and then he tried to move out and get an apartment. And he almost could not find an apartment around here that would rent to him because he had no credit history.
And see, the one of the pioneers in all of this garbage, Vince, was the insurance industry. Most states, and I'm sure it's perfectly legal in Georgia, all over the South, the insurance industry can just do what it pleases because the insurance commissioner is usually someone who transferred over from an insurance executive position. And the insurance industry pioneered this kind of stuff by using your credit score as the means by which they determine how much you'll pay in the way of a premium or if they will insure you at all. Now tell me, please, and they say they've got statistical evidence. I say it's BS and it's just a way to jack up premiums. Tell me how being late with your phone bill is an indication of what kind of a driver you are.
Absolutely. If they persist in this, it's gonna bite them in the rear one of these days with the whole housing crisis and everything. Nobody's gonna have good credit before too much longer.
Well, yeah. This is, you know what'll happen then, Vince? That just means that the premiums go up, and that just means that I'll rent you the apartment, but you know you don't have the best credit score in the world, so it's going to be an extra $200 a month. That's what it's all about.
And do they think overcharging for these things are going to help the person with their credit score?
They're not in the helping business, Vince.
Oh yeah, I know.
They're in the money making business. And frankly, we've entered a sort of economic phase in America that's best represented by Larry Darrell and Daryl on the old Newhart show. You know, anything
I'm
for.
I'm going to show my youth there.
Oh, okay. Well, they had this anything for a buck. That was their motto. Anything for a buck. And so it's not unusual to see this when money gets tighter, what you'll actually see is business people working harder to get more out of it from more out of people who have less in the first place. Because they figure if they don't get it all now, they might never get it. It's really not that unusual.
State of affairs when we've been put into a situation, well, first of all, you've got to put yourself in debt to be worth something, and then if something happens to you and you're put in a position where, you know, you're in more debt, now we're going to use the fact that you have bad debt to interfere with your ability to do things that will help you get out of debt and just start the circle going, and guess what? We're all screwed. Yay!
Well, let's just, I'm not asking you to name names or anything, but think about your county seat. You're in Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There in your county seat, how many payday loan businesses are there? Or loan businesses?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Just within 5 miles of my house, I count probably at least three. There's the one on the corner of 95. There's the one in the shopping plaza up the street. There's the one in the next town over, which is only about 11 miles from where I am. There's one in downtown of where I'm at now, So, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's a lot. Suffice it to say, the answer could be interpreted as a lot.
Yeah, and why do those businesses exist?
Prey off people who need money.
Yes, and the people need money from the payday lenders because they can't get credit from normal credit-providing institutions like, you know, banks or finance companies.
Yeah, but it's interest rate that people charge you is just astronomical.
Yeah, it's a predatory interest rate. It is usury within the old definition of the word. But what we're dealing with here, it's just a fact. I mean, no getting around it, is you've got states, and many of them are southern states, where the people are profoundly underrepresented in their government. So that the state government, you know, just as I said with the insurance commissioner, the state government responds to payday lenders and acts as an advocate for payday lenders. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so the state thereby sanctions the payday lenders to prey upon people who desperately need money.
They do more than sanction it. They actually encourage it.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's an absolute out-and-out, outright failure of government. It's a failure of representation. I mean, can you imagine...
When do you think the debtor prisons are going to come back?
Say again? Oh, debtor's prisons?
When do you think they're coming back?
In a way, don't we already have them? I mean, if you consider how most of our imprisoned population gets there, isn't our prison system already a debtor's prison?
I don't know. I thought most of our prisoners in our prison system were in there because of drugs.
And they sell drugs, and people possess drugs. Why? Because they're trying to get away from their miseries. And they're miserable. Yeah. Why? Because they don't have any money, among other things, and they don't have any hope. And then there's that other class of drug prisoner who is there because he was selling drugs, because he wanted more than minimum wage at McDonald's could offer him.
And couldn't get a job at any place more usable because all of a sudden, because he's got a credit score a couple points below nominal, they think he's useless.
Right. He gets into trouble.
I guess that's the part of it that pisses me off. People are now starting to use your credit score as a definition of the type of person that you are. Never mind that, you know, there's usually a good reason for you to have bad debt. You know?
Yeah.
But no, they're just going to look at that and go, oh, no, we don't want you working here because you've got bad credit or, you know.
Well, but can see this? What I'm getting at, though, Vince, is this all sort of rolls together, doesn't it? The failure of our educational system, which I guess I hit, you know, 3 or 4 nights ago. The failure of our educational system according to the study that came out, we have 1.2 million high school dropouts in this country per year. And I just started, and I got to thinking, that's 1/300th. In other words, that's 1/3 of 1% of the entire population gives up on any form of education every year. That is unsustainable in a country that wants to call itself free. Tell me if I've got the math wrong, but I think it is 1/3 of 1% of the national population.
Don't ask me about math, dude. My wife's the math expert.
Okay. So you and I are in the same boat, without an oar.
I suck at math.
Oh, me too.
Give me a calculator, and I can do math all day. But I mean, besides that, I'm limited to I can count to 20, and that's because I have 10 fingers and 10 toes.
Okay. No dirty jokes. No dirty jokes. But
yeah, leave that one alone.
Yeah, but anyway, no. So you've got 1/3 of 1% of the entire national population giving up at the age of about 16 years on education every year. Those people are going to find themselves in economic hell, and those people are going to wind up at payday lenders, and they're going to wind up at rent to own, and they're going to wind up at rent-a-center. Okay. and they're gonna and they're gonna be devastated because they're driving a crap automobile, and if the thing goes down, they can't get to their crappy job, and their boss at their crappy job is in a state that is a no contract state where it's where everything is so-called at-will employment, so they lose their job. And then they go into the public assistance system.
I'm lucky in that regard. I don't think we are an at-will state. I know Florida is.
Yeah, Georgia's an at-will state.
When did they become an at-will state?
They started out one.
Oh, okay.
In other words, absent a written contract, all employment is at-will. You can fire for... And see, this is the con of it all, Vince. The way they frame it is, well, you can be fired for any reason. But by the same token, as a worker, you have the right to quit for any reason. Isn't that just lovely?
Uh-huh.
So,
I didn't have that right to begin with.
So you've got this vicious downward spiral that pushes people into desperate straits. And the people who are in desperate straits are more easily preyed upon by the people who charge interest rates of 27, 29, 35, 50, and 200%. And then you wind up with people who, if you're a landlord, you don't want to rent to those people. You know, that's what HUD's for. And, of course, credit scores also provide a convenient method whereby a potential landlord can say, well, you know, your credit score wasn't...
That happened.
Your credit score wasn't good enough for you to be able to rent here and mask racial discrimination, among other things, or national origin discrimination, because even though that stuff is against the law, if you can hide behind a credit score, then you get to do it anyway.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the whole reason I'm living here right now is because no one else will rent to me. We tried to get in at a nicer place down the street, and... that's pretty much what happened. We're sorry, but your credit is not good enough to work to be renting here, so no.
So you see what I'm saying? I mean, we do have debtor's prisons.
Although there is, in that situation, though, there is one thing. A lot of renters that do run credit checks and whatnot, just for anyone listening who may ever run into this situation, find out if they'll take a rental history. If you pay your rent every month, then a rental history, it'll make you look wonderful.
Yeah. Unfortunately, more and more you're finding people who, no, I want to run your score. And interestingly,
I haven't run into that because I didn't realize we could do that until after the last time I went apartment hunting. And if I get this job, I'm going to have to move. We've been inquiring down in the area of the job at different. And they've all said they'll take a rental history, so I haven't really run into that. But if it hasn't yet, it'll probably will at some point.
Yeah, it's coming. There's no doubt in my mind. Because anything that the insurance industry finds a way to make a buck on, the rest of the world will quickly follow suit. And that's just sad but true. I mean, the other day I made a call because... we're looking to, we heard an ad and just, thought, okay, well, maybe we could reduce our, insurance premiums. And as a consequence, I called and they said, well, you consent, of course, for us to run a credit history on you. And I said, I'll talk to you later. Because, no, I don't consent for you to run a credit history on whether or not you do. For auto insurance.
Oh.
And I said, no, I don't consent for you to run a credit history on me. I'm looking to give you money, and you're going to determine on my credit history whether or not my money's good enough for you. Good day. But, I'm an ass like that. On the other hand, if you got 100 million Americans saying that to them, and their business started drying up, you'd see change.
This is true.
So, I guess the upside to any of this is any of this can be changed. Any of this can be rectified. Any of this can be fixed. But only at such...
Just motivate people to get up off their... do something about it, which seems to be the kicker.
Right. Only at such point as the American people decide to pay attention. You know, we get hammered over the head if you listen to radio or watch TV or anything, or even, you know, even on the Internet, you know, pop-up ads that say, you know, do you know what your credit score is? I mean, that in itself, that business of keeping up, you know, we'll send you an alert if there's a negative, blah, 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 blah. Your data about you and your ability to access it has become a function of the profit motive. Wow.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You can't even get a credit score anymore unless you pay for it. I'm actually, I have one credit card, and the only reason I got that credit card was because it comes with free credit score monitoring.
Yeah. And now you're entitled, most people don't know it. If you are rejected or declined for credit in any way, that entitles you to a free copy of your credit report.
A free copy of your credit report, but not a free copy of your credit score.
Oh, no, not of your score. That you have to figure out for yourself.
Yeah. Which you can't do because they won't release exactly how they look through your report and use what to determine what your credit score is going to be. So the only way you can get your credit score is to turn around and pay somebody to give it to you. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, it's all a dodge. And, you know, you can extend this into the federal government. You know, we've got federal laws, Vince, that say the federal government is precluded from doing data snooping on the American citizen. But the Bush administration got its evil-minded little lawyers out. And they said, well, what that means is not that we can't snoop. It's just that we can't do it ourselves. We can always hire it out. And hence the government contracts with organizations like ChoicePoint, who was also the provider of the so-called felon list to Florida for the 2000 election.
Oh, the one they screwed up so bad that it disenfranchised how many people who would have voted Democratic?
Yeah, well, it disenfranchised enough people to put George Bush in the White House. You know, with people, and it was largely ethnically based. What it was ethnic voter cleansing. And those are the people who are reporting on you when you go to apply to rent an apartment or get insurance or get a job. That's the one that just kind of makes me sit in slack-jawed wonder. The people who screwed up Florida are passing on your viability as a decent human being. Kind of did the same thing to you, didn't it?
I'm sorry?
I said kind of did the same thing to you, didn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and maybe I'm overreacting. I mean, I didn't start worrying about this until somebody who I told that I was applying for the job for was like, oh, they're going to run your credit score, and you're probably not going to get the job. So, I mean, I really don't know. I mean, they may call me later on this week and be like, hey, you're hired, at which point I'll be like, woo! But, you know.
And I hope that's how it turns out. But, no, you're not overreacting. Frankly, credit scoring, data mining, all of that stuff is purely Orwellian, profit-motivated BS. I mean, I
wish we had a right.
I really wish. Go ahead.
I was about to say, I really wish we could get a law passed or something, because, I mean, I'm not necessarily opposed to the idea of them doing it for certain things. But, you know, I really wish that we had an option as consumers to check a box that says, no, I don't consent to this, and they couldn't use that as a reason to not hire you.
No, they just, well...
At the very least.
That would make some sense to me. I mean, I think a merchant has some right, not an unqualified right, but some right to base his credit decision on your credit worthiness. On the other hand, are we going to ruin somebody's life over the fact that they were 30 days late on their student loan payment? You know, the student loan secret police will bust your ass in your credit report if you're late. Yes, they will. And so now will the power company, the phone company, and depending on what state you're in, the cable company. Everybody reports everything to these reporting agencies, and then in turn, the reporting agency sells the report back to them. It's a beautiful dodge.
What really ticks me off is that I kind of have an interesting situation where one of the reasons I am worried about my credit report is I owe a company money. I owe Bank of America about $60. And I owe Bank of America about $60 because when I was working in Virginia, I went to a merchant and swiped my Bank of America debit card. And I had enough money in my account to carry that transaction. It was the day before payday, and I had in my account to carry that transaction. The merchant charged me twice. So then Bank of America charged me an overdraft fee. But, oh, wait, it gets better. Because I don't remember exactly what the situation was, but basically I got charged an overdraft fee for the merchant's mistake, and then I got charged an overdraft fee because they tried to charge me the overdraft fee, and I got an overdraft fee for an overdraft fee. It's really weird the way it came out, but that's kind of what happened.
And again, if you look at your state legislator, because all this is state regulated, not federal. If you look at your state legislature and your banking committee, you will find that every member of the banking committee, Republican or Democrat, has profound ties to the banking industry in your state. There's not a consumer-oriented advocate number one on that committee. Guarantee it.
Well, to make a long story short, Bank of America finally said, well, we're not going to, basically said, well, we've corrected the issue with the merchant, but you still owe for these overdraft fees. And I basically, my point of view is I didn't overdraft my account.
No, you didn't.
So to make a long story short, I fought with Bank of America for a while, and finally told them to close my accounts out, and they're like, well, you still owe us the $60. And I said, no, I don't. And I said, I'm not paying you for it. And they said, well, the only way we're going to not put this on your credit is if you sue us for it. And suing them for it would be more than paying the $60 to...
Ah, but there's where you make your mistake. Yeah. Suing them for it might not be more expensive than paying them the $60.
How do you figure? Getting a hold of a lawyer alone is going to cost me at least three times that.
Not necessarily. There are consumer lawyers out there who do things on contingent fee. There are lawyers out there who do things pro bono, you know, for free, in other words. There are lawyers out there who put together class actions based on this kind of conduct. There are torts out there. Things like consumer slander or libel. You know, and very few people know this, if a credit reporting agency puts false information on your credit report about you and that negatively impacts your ability to get credit, you have a big claim for damages against the reporting agency. If you look it up, you'll find that they have been sued time and time and time again for this kind of misconduct.
Well, the only thing is, at this point, I don't even remember where it was or how I did it or whatever. And...
Sure, but I mean, you'll probably wind up eating the $60 down. But going down the road, going forward,
I was hoping to wait for it to fall off my report. But yeah, you're probably right at this point, especially if I get pegged up for this job because of it.
Right. And frankly, if you get dinged for the job out of it, then I would be talking to a lawyer in a hurry. Because going in and talking to them, you generally don't get charged if you're talking to a consumer lawyer. You know, first consultation's free, that kind of stuff.
Okay, but Bob, let me ask you this. I mean, even if I did take that route, and even with I went through and, you know, got a lawyer and we decided we had something worth suable over and whatnot, that's not a quick process. For crying out loud, that could tie my life up for like the next 5 years.
These guys,
first of all, don't necessarily go cleanly. Second of all, they delay things out they possibly can. So even it's not even waiting for somebody to make up their minds over whether you're right or not. They tie it all up for years in procedural BS.
Right, and that's where having it that's where that's where the quality of the lawyer comes in, Vince. You got to have somebody that fights back with the same kind of tactics that they use. But please understand that from an actuarial standpoint or a statistical standpoint, they count on people to lump it. You know, one third, dig it. I think fully one third, last I checked, and I think it was our buddy Jurassic Pork over at Welcome to Pottersville, the blog that pointed this out to me. Fully one third of bank revenues in the United States of America come from overdraft fees and from late fees on credit cards. In other words, it's free money that they get for doing nothing.
You know what also really sucks is that some banks, and every bank that does this to me, I drop them. And so far, I've only had to drop two banks for this, but it's usually the bigger banks that do this. When you do overdraft on your account, be it your fault or not, next thing you know, if you've like done, usually in my experience, whenever you're using a debit card, if you use it as a debit and not a credit, things will hit your bank pretty much in the order that you did them. So if I go to X consumer place and buy, you know, X amount worth of this, and then go here and buy X amount worth of this, I'll go for the first place first and the second place second. What I've noticed though is that some of these stupid banks, and I checked with my dad too, and my dad says it's happened to him a couple of times.
Yeah, they post oddly.
But they don't post oddly. What they do is when they figure out that you're low on your account, all of a sudden your everything that was like really high dollar amount, like if you have a bunch of like $5-6 things and then have like a couple $50 or $100 things, like your rent or something, they'll put the high dollar stuff down first. And then if that draws down your account or something, then if you've got a deposit sitting in there, instead of posting that in, they'll put that at the top of the pile, so that gets done last. And then you get hit for all these, instead of getting like, clearing all the little things and then getting an overdraft fee for the one or two big things, they'll put down the one or two big things, clear those, and then you get pegged $3 a pop for $1-$2 transactions. And you might have 12 of them suckers sitting out there. And then they'll put the deposit in and say, oh, well, the deposit didn't clear until last, so you owe us $300 worth of overdraft fees.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I hate that. Crap.
Again, this is all state regulated, Vince. It all flows back to your state house. The Fair Credit Reporting Act and stuff like that is federal in nature, but you know, banking regulations are largely on a state basis. And what banks can do to individual consumers is. What's the word the Republicans like to use? States' rights. It's a states' rights issue. Only problem is, it's a banks' rights issue. And consumers, I mean, look at the bankruptcy reform of a few years ago. Who got reformed? The credit card companies got turned into secured creditors when they are, by definition, unsecured creditors. You know, you get a credit card, you don't sign a deed of trust to your home or your car. You don't put up collateral. It's a dice roll for the credit card company and a dice roll for you. It's a gamble. You're saying that you can make enough money to pay the debt down, and they're betting that you can too. But if it goes sideways, traditionally in bankruptcy, they had to eat the loss. Well, now because
that was before the bankruptcy reform bill.
Thanks to the bankruptcy reform bill, they get treated. The credit card company gets treated for the most part just like somebody who has a mortgage on your home, and you can't get shed of that damn credit card debt, whether it was your fault or not. I mean, look, people run up credit card debt for a variety of reasons. My father had significant credit card debt. From 7 months living in a hotel watching my mother die in Birmingham, Alabama. He wasn't living in a profligate fashion. But you know what? He couldn't live on the street and be there every day for her. The vast majority of American bankruptcies prior to the subprime crisis were a result of medical treatment crises. And this is people who have medical insurance in the first place.
You know, it's really interesting too. I don't know how many of your listeners actually listen to like NPR. They've been doing a thing all week about basically every other modern country in the world, what they're doing for healthcare and whatnot. And I mean, they were talking to like health officials in like Taiwan and Japan. And you know, whenever they ask the question, you know, how many bankruptcies do you have in this country? What percentage of your bankruptcies in this country are as a result of medical bills? You know what almost each and every single one of them said?
What?
It's unheard of.
Yeah, it's unimaginable. But see, this is, you know, this is a country that preys upon its middle class instead of supporting it, and that's why we're in the trouble we're in. When a country views its middle class as consumers, as things, as machines that have to go to work, come home, go buy some crap, go to sleep, get up, go to work, come home, go buy some crap, you know, in that endless cycle, this is what you wind up with. It is a completely failed economic theory. And yet, like, you know, the definition of insanity, that is to continue doing the same thing over and over again, each time expecting a different result, you know, that's insane. That's what we're doing. Because at the very knot of the cancer, there is a group of people who understand that if we try that, or they believe that if they try to back away from this so-called consumer culture, that everything goes bust. And you know what? Everything might go bust, Vince. But
I don't know if it would go bust, for crying out loud. Before we turned into such a consumerist, materialistic nation, we seem to get along for the most part fairly okay.
Well, we did, but we also had periods of boom and bust. We had cycles of insolvency. And the whole goal of all of this consumer culture that was crafted after the Second World War was to make a perpetually growing economy. Because it was there was a determination made that if the economy remained stable or remained at stasis, that was terrible. And couldn't keep up with population growth, among other things. Pretty heady stuff, this, and I probably have no business talking about 90% of it, because I'm not an economist. I'm just a guy who sees this crap happening and really profoundly objects to it.
Well, don't feel bad. The guy who's one of the guys running for president says he sucks at economics too. So why the hell is he running?
Yeah, but he's gonna fix it. We're going to get an 18. We're going to get an 18.
I know nothing about economics. I don't need. I don't even know what recession technically. By God, I will fix it.
Yeah, dig it. You know, he wants that gas tax holiday. The McCain that it does. At current, and that's an 18.4 cent tax. So, at say $3 a gallon, you would have
$3.50, my friend.
Well, I know, but we're just round numbering here. At $3 a gallon, you'd have to buy 10 gallons to get $1.84 tax benefit from the tax holiday. So instead of spending $30, you would spend $28.16. Don't spend that savings all in one place, brother, you know?
Man, dude, I remember when I first started driving, and I'm young. I didn't start driving all that long ago. It's been within the last 10 years. I remember when I first started driving, I could take my car, which was a 95 Neon, and I still drive a Neon, except now it's a 2000 Neon, but I could take my 95 Neon, which had a 12-gallon gas tank. I could take it to the thing, and for $10, I could fill that thing. I think gas ranged anywhere. I think the average price of gas for the unleaded cheap stuff was about 99 cents a gallon. Sometimes it'd go down as low as 89. We thought, back then, I thought $1.20 was expensive gas. And, jeez, dude, I put $10 worth of gas in my tank now. I don't even, my gas light doesn't turn off.
I know.
and it's still a 12-gallon tank.
And that's what, you know, I don't know how this is a movie. I don't know how it ends. I used to think that I knew, you know, that America is America and America will be pretty much what America is throughout my life. I don't know what America looks like 10 years from now anymore. I honest to God don't know. But I've got a creeping sensation that it's fairly bleak, but it's going to get absolutely terrifying if you get 4 or 8 more years of a Republican in the White House. I mean, you know, the really creepy stuff that none of us even like to think about. That's what 8 more years of Republican rule will do to this country. Hey, Vince, I got to roll along, brother, but great conversation. Thank you very much.
Absolutely, sir. Anytime. I'll talk to you later.
Okay. Hope the job works out, man.
I'll let you know.
All right. Thanks. Our buddy Vince calling from Georgia. We don't begin to even comprehend how pervasive this business of credit scoring and credit is in our culture. We don't. Hi, who have I got? Hello? All right. Sorry about that. So it's about a quarter after. We'll take our top of the third hour break a little bit late. What the heck? But, you know, what's on your mind? See, this all really does tie into what this damned fool, McCain, was prattling about today and battling on. I mean, I say I've got no business talking economics. He's really got no business talking economics, Mr. 894th in a class of 899. I mean, I mailed it in on a few classes, and I got a few C's in college, but that was mainly in the classes that I hated. That's a personal problem of mine. If I hated the class, it wasn't going to go well. If I liked them, generally the classes I loved, A's. Not bragging, just it's just a personality defect. But if I hated it, there was a strong likelihood that I was either not going to pass it, or I was going to just barely pass it. But that's me. A couple of emails before. Take a little break. What the hell, Bob? You want to get in the conversation? There's about 45 minutes left. Jump right in. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. It don't go without you. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man. Take it all. 'Cause I'm the tax man.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Quick program reminder before we go back to the phones. We had anticipated Peter Godbold's return and Strictly Confidential's return to live internet radio this week. He has been the victim of a confederacy of dunces in the form of his internet service provider. His phone service and his internet connection are both just garbage right now. But as soon as it gets fixed, and as soon as, you know, Peter gets done, like, you know, kicking walls and stuff, because he's really frustrated at this point, he'll be back with a brand new, fresh Strictly Confidential. So Strictly Confidential is a rerun this evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. But the horn section and All Foxed Up are both live and fresh. So I invite you to just don't touch that mouse and stay right here with the horn all the way up through 1 a.m. Eastern Time. Okay? Okay. And now, let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Yeah, I had to get in on this one. You know, thank God for that conversation. Both segments before, the bit before about the redneck from Kentucky there, that congressman who referred to Barack Obama as a boy, and the gentleman who called in earlier about basically the banking system in certain parts of this country, because I thought I was crazy. So it vindicates me that I'm not a conspiracy theorist.
Oh, no, you're not. No. Not where banks are concerned.
You know, it just vindicates me. And, you know, I know a lot of gas stations and a lot of car insurance companies must hate me now since I chose the whole lifestyle change of getting rid of my car and living, you know, gas free as much as I can. You know, just taking public transportation.
Yeah. And
part of the country where I can, well, I don't have to depend on the almighty automobile.
It's very frustrating for those of us who would like to participate in things like public transportation. We can't.
Yeah.
You know, some sort of light rail system that would link the cities of West Virginia or of Appalachia in general. You know, we've got something called the Appalachian Regional Commission, and they dole out lots of money every year, and it's generally money fairly well spent. But it amazes me that nobody's ever thought about, you know, an Appalachian transportation structure.
Well, they'll pull out an excuse how the terrain is too rough, which is not an excuse because...
Well, the terrain is difficult, and that's what militates in favor of a transportation system. It would be cheaper to build a rail system than it would be to build the oodles of highways. You know, I was on the road over the weekend, Kevin, and I drove through, and I can't emphasize this enough. If you want to see some of the most beautiful country...
Oh, I've been through there. I know.
Yeah, Pendleton County, West Virginia. Just go and just, like, if you've got Google Earth, you know, the little blue dots where people have put photographs, look at Pendleton County. It'll take your breath away. But you know what? It's kind of interesting because the main highway that runs through Pendleton County is U.S. 33. It's a U.S. highway, you know, just like, the shield highways that aren't interstates, a little two-lane highway.
Yeah.
And... The way West Virginia is laid out, if you get off of I-79 and you take U.S. 33 eastbound through Lewis County and Randolph County, you mostly get four-lane highway until the four-lane runs out and turns into two-lane, and that is where something called Appalachian Corridor H was proposed.
Yeah.
And the people of that extremely beautiful part of West Virginia put their foot down and said, we don't want any part of Appalachian Corridor H because we know what you would do to our natural beauty to get it. And I can't blame them for it. You know, we don't, because it was just, it basically it was going to link I-79 to I-81 and create this quick corridor through central West Virginia and eastern Virginia. And they knew what it would do to their economy. They knew what it would do to their natural beauty. They knew what it would do to their way of life. And as far as I can tell, it looks like it's pretty much got the kibosh put on it. On the other hand, though, if you linked up, say, Appalachia via some form of mass transit, like a rail system, why would you not use it?
Because you're discouraged. I'll never forget when I was living in the D.C. area. They do have a railway that goes from Washington to West Virginia.
Yes, they do. That's the Cardinal on Amtrak.
Yeah, and guess what? It doesn't run. Now, being in New York, I'm used to the subway running 24/7.
Yeah.
But it runs out in the morning out to Washington, doesn't return in the morning, and then it comes back in the evening back to West Virginia and doesn't go to D.C.
Oh, the Cardinal runs twice. The Cardinal runs twice a week.
Exactly, which makes no sense. You know how many people from West Virginia commute into D.C. in order to make somewhat of a decent living?
Oh, from places like Martinsburg and Charlestown, a bunch.
Oh yeah, and I'm like, that should be running 24/7.
Sure.
Both ways.
Yeah. No argument here.
Allow it, people will use it.
But you know, that's what I don't understand. You know, you're in New York now, and public transit just makes sense.
It's good for the economy. Part of the reason, in spite of the heavy taxes that New York has, okay, why companies tend to stay here is because of the public transportation.
Sure. I mean, I've got a story in the stack here, Kevin, that just sort of, you know, every now and then I run across them and I just sit here with my mouth hanging open catching flies. You remember Trent Lott, Mississippi Senator?
How can you forget Plastic Head?
Yeah, exactly. Helmet Head Lott.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he's getting out of the Senate gig, and he's learning how to be a lobbyist now, and he's being taught how to be a lobbyist by a former Louisiana senator named John Breaux.
Yeah.
And I ran across this news story where Lott is explaining how different his world is. And it is so offensive, it is so sickening, that I can scarcely put words around it to really give a full sense of how disgusting it is. Lott told, I forget which newspaper, but he said, you know, I'm having to learn a lot about being a lobbyist. I haven't paid for my own lunch in 30 years. And
how much I know he's a millionaire.
Oh yeah, and he's when he was in the Senate, and the Senate was considering ethics reform, he complained about the ethics reform. Now we're going to say you can't have a meal for more than $20. What are you going to? Where are you going to? McDonald's?
Oh God!
I mean, just utterly disconnected from the American people.
And these are the same people who complain about welfare recipients.
He said, "I had a taxpayer-funded car and drive in the Senate. Why? Just the other day, I took the Metro for the first time." As if it was somehow demeaning to him to use public transportation.
I don't know. You know. And then they had the audacity to gang up on Barack Obama and say he's an elitist.
Right, yeah. That's my point. And Barack Obama's the elitist. Well, here's a guy who openly admits, Kevin, that he has accepted bribes in the form of meals for 30 years. But Barack Obama's the elitist. kind of, you know, you moments like this, you're just glad you're not there's not a rock sitting on the ground next to you because you'd pick it up and throw it.
Yeah. Well, moments like, you know, it's like I thank God every day that, you know, I am sheltered from a lot of things being here back home.
You know, it blows me away that you look at being in New York as being sheltered. I mean, I'm not being demeaning. But I think
No, you're not, but I am sheltered from a lot of things because, believe you me, for 5 years, I tried living in the quote-unquote real America, and I couldn't do it. It broke up my marriage, but I just couldn't do it. And, you know, that's the tragedy of it. Because people buy into that nonsense hook, line, and sinker.
And can you put your finger, Kevin, on what it is you think what you feel like you're sheltered from? I'm not putting you on the spot, but I find this.
No, it's not that I'm. I'm sheltered from the blatant bigotry for one thing. You know, the lack of community. For another, you know, people talk about the. Part of the reason why, okay, take the two biggest disasters that has occurred in this country in the past 7 years, 9/11 and New Orleans. 9/11 could have been a much bigger tragedy in its own right, but people really pulled together in this city. Okay, while New Orleans, it was such a every man for itself. When the people try to flee from the city, there are certain areas that outlying counties outside New Orleans where basically the police department had their shotguns out ready to shoot when people are trying to leave the city so they wouldn't drown. And they had to go back into the
city. Yeah.
In New York, people from the surrounding counties lost their lives coming in to fight fires. You know, it's a total different mindset. You know, this so-called rugged individualism, you know, it's got to stop.
Just out of curiosity, Kevin, what is what's it cost to say go from say you're in Brooklyn and you want to go to a Yankees game in the Bronx?
$2 one way.
God, dang. I'm sorry. I feel, you know, you ever seen that old Gary Cooper movie, Sergeant York?
Oh yeah. Yeah, he always wants to come to New York.
He wants to go and ride the Bronx Express.
If you ever want to come, I'll gladly give you a tour. I am so relieved that I will never have to set foot in a Walmart again unless I leave the city.
And you can do business with mom and pop businesses.
Exactly. Yes.
Mm.
And people look at me like I'm strange. You know, people look at me like I'm strange. You know,
this is so neat for me to hear, Kevin, because growing up as a Southerner, loathing New York City is something that is raised to an art form.
Oh yeah. But what's so funny about that, Bob, is that, you know, when I did my little walkabout through America, quote unquote, Crocodile Dundee, they hate New York, but yet they try to measure up to New York.
Oh sure.
It's like, and you know, maybe sometimes I come off as a New York elitist, and I apologize to the rest of the people out in the audience. Out there, you know, I don't want to come off at that, but, you know, I've seen and I've lived in periods in different regions of this country, and there's no place like it, and there's no place I'd rather be at this point in my life.
You know, the best example of what you're talking about, from time to time I mentioned, Kevin, that my guilty television pleasure is to once a week sit down and watch No Reservations with Anthony Bourdain on the Travel Channel.
Oh yeah,
and he had a Vegas segment that reran last week, where he went to New York, in Vegas.
Oh hour, yeah, that's funny.
And you know, he is way deep, you know, New Yorker kind of guy. And he's walking through New York, and Vegas just with a full body cringe going the whole time.
Oh, yeah. And it ain't the same, I'm telling you.
Oh, no. They using the editing function or whatever, they superimposed a sign on a stop sign in the fake New York, New York, that said, "Where are all the GD pigeons?" But it's you're right. People measure by it, and people love to hate it. And I think they love to hate it because, for the most part, for a city its size, it works. I mean, there are cities in the world that are larger than New York. There are seven cities in the People's Republic of China, seven,
yeah,
that are now officially bigger than New York. But those cities don't work.
Yeah.
Those cities are poisonous. Those cities have no reasonable public accommodation. No, you know, they're mainly just sprawl. New York works, and
the only thing that's malfunctioning in New York City is the public school system and being.
Kevin, New York's failings in the public school system are not a failing of New York. That's an American failing. It's like what I was talking about with Vince. You know, when you just blithely note that statistically 1/3 of 1% of the American people give up on education at the age of 16 every year.
Yeah, that is sad.
That's not a problem. You're building a bomb.
Well, the bomb is already built. Because Guess where a lot of these people end up, and where they're going to end up?
New York.
Walter Reed.
Well, okay, all right. I get where you're going. Sure.
Bottom line, Walter Reed, Iraq. You know, John McCain's 100-year war pledge. You know, it's like he was on CNBC when Chris Matthew do those college tours or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And everybody's rallying around them and he's doing the interviews. There was not one face of color I could spot in that whole audience. Talk about the political wing of the KKK.
Yeah. No kidding. I think about it. For anybody who does what I do, what Guy does, you know, New York is the be-all and end-all.
And it's not. It's only one corner of the world.
No. In the radio business, Howard Stern did not end his career in Washington, D.C.
No, it ended in New York. Oh, yeah. And, hey. Well, that's where he wanted to be all along.
You make enough money, you wind up with a nice brand. I'm talking about the really, really good money, the Howard Stern money. You know, it's a brownstone on Central Park West, right? I mean, it would be fun. It would be fun, and you know, it's on the list. It's on the list, Kevin. One of these days, you know, because I've got to expose my kids to some of this stuff. While I want them to know and learn the wonders of West Virginia and the joys of being an Appalachian person, of being a hillbilly, for all intents and purposes,
I
want them to know there's a world out there.
Excuse me?
I want them to know that there's a world out there and what that world looks like.
And don't get me wrong, there's a lot to be appreciated from that culture, Bob. When I was living in D.C., I used to spend my weekends in West Virginia, as you may know. Because my neighbor here in Brooklyn owns a house out there, and I used to go and check on it for her. And beautiful country, that route that you talked about, U.S. 33, beautiful driving. You know, America's birthplace is Appalachia.
Yeah, it is. It really, really is.
We would not have seceded from Britain. Had a it not been for Appalachia. And hell, New York is part of Appalachia, you know, once you go a couple of miles beyond the Bronx.
Sure it is. Sure it is.
Okay, the Appalachian Mountains go from Canada all the way down to northern Florida.
Well, it's kind of like Maine to the very northeast corner of Mississippi, but yeah, pretty close. I've got to expose my family to some of this stuff because we took a little weekend trip up to Pittsburgh a few years back and went to a Pirates game and took the public transport from our buddy's place down into the city. It was a great experience. And we, in the course of walking back from the game, we walked past a homeless man passed out in a doorway. And my daughter was so shocked by it, and she's a child, that we got a few feet away, and she just stopped and wept.
Oh, yeah.
And it's
a regular occurrence here, and I weep, too. I wanted to, bring up the issue of, Barack Obama not having any he's condescending to rural America. Believe it or not, what rural America is suffering is the same thing that urban America is suffering from.
And what do you diagnose that as?
Poverty.
Yeah.
Because the reality is that the jobs are not going into the ghettos or el barrios in the inner cities. Okay? Just like it's not going into the hollers of West Virginia and Kentucky either. So it ends up, guess where the Army recruiters come up from?
Sure they do. Sure they do.
Okay, so it's the same symptoms of a disease, of the same disease. It's just affecting different parts of this body called America. And believe it or not, a lot of them are doing the same thing. Our friend Gary there said yesterday, go on to any inner city corner, whether it be New York, Newark, Philadelphia, any Chicago, you're going to see a bunch of men standing around what we call in New York a bodega.
Yeah.
Okay? It's the same thing. A bunch of men in Appalachia standing around the gas station all day drinking beer.
I was coming back from when I came back from D.C. the other night. I took my traveling companion decided to spend the night down at the local State Park Lodge, and so yeah. I met my wife down there so that then we could turn around and we turned around and came home. We passed a couple of kids who were maybe 13 years old. It's 10:30 on a Sunday night. They're just wandering around.
Oh yeah.
And
anything that. I'm sorry.
No.
When I was living in Florida, I used to see the kids wandering around, wandering around the streets 10:30 at night on a school night.
And, Agnes looked at him and said, what are they doing out? And I said, well, A, because they don't have any parents who give a damn. And she said, but it's a school night. And I said, what did I just say? They don't have any parents who give a damn, and they're not going to be in school tomorrow. See, most states have the I don't know if it's this way in New York, but the age of being able to quit school is 16 in most states, I think.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
And for the most part, I think if you did a statistical study, you would find that the kids who quit school at 16 actually quit school 3 or 4 years earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Because their attendance is sporadic at best, and yeah.
My first period of class, how many kids come in to my class to sleep?
Yeah, probably a bunch.
Oh, yeah, and I'm like, why are you sleeping? You just woke up. I've been up all night. What are you doing up all night? Taking care of business. What is that business?
I bet that doesn't go over real well.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't, but that's just the way it is. So, the same things that afflict rural America is afflicting inner city America. And, you know, we need to look beyond the color and the race lines and all that, because I tell you, Bob, when I did some volunteer work at Walter Reed last year, the people who were lying in the bed, whether they were black, white, or brown, either came from one of two places, either the ghetto, one of three places, the ghetto, El Barrio, or a holler.
Yeah.
Or some former blue-collar town, you know, one of four places.
Yeah, one of those places that Obama was talking about, where the jobs
exactly.
left and they haven't come back, and they're not coming back, and people are pissed.
Exactly.
And the, you know, I play that story, that song from time to time by Jason Isbell called "Dress Blues." It's about it's written dedicated to a kid named Matt Conley from Greenhill, Alabama. Trust me when I say that Greenhill is just it's pretty much a gas station and a high school.
Oh yeah.
And he was a good student. Quarterbacked his football team, real dedicated, all of that stuff, decent grades, wanted to go to college, couldn't go to college. But there was a Marine recruiter there who said, "Son, we'll send you to college quick as you're done with your obligation to the government."
Yeah.
And he signed up, and instead of coming back and going to college, he's got a baby who has no father and a wife who has no husband. He's in the dirt. And Greenhill is diminished by at least one individual who might have made a difference in its future.
Oh yeah.
And all because of a tiny-minded little guy who said they tried to kill my daddy.
Yeah. Well, you know what bothers me, and again, you know, not to vilify the South, is that they have all this money for their football team. But nothing for academics.
Oh sure, and nothing to get kids into school, and no outreach. You know, the Matt Conley. I didn't know him, but I'm guessing based on what I've read about him, he would have been a wonderful candidate for, you know, if he wanted to do the military, he would have been a wonderful candidate for one of the service academies.
Oh yeah.
But there was no one there to guide him in that direction. And he didn't have the, I guess he didn't have the political connections that would have gotten him into Annapolis or West Point or Colorado Springs or New Haven, Connecticut.
Oh, yeah.
So, it's a very frustrating thing. The South, no, well, the South is that way, but you know what, as far as sports programs are concerned, from high school on up, it's that way in most of America where, in large part, high schools, you know, not just colleges, but high schools are life support systems for athletic programs so that fat, pustle-gutted old men, you know, my age and older, can relive their youth. And, wow, is that just about bass-ackwards.
Oh, yeah, because it's like one of the schools I taught in, you know, it's a failing school, but the basketball team is one of the top 10 in the city. If I was the principal there, I would be, and I know a lot of the times schools have to whore themselves out for funding by the various sneaker companies and the corporate interests that come in, but hey, I'd have a no basketball team if the school's failing academically if I was a headmaster.
Yeah. And, yeah, just sort of refocus. Is that what you mean?
Excuse me?
I said just sort of refocus. Get your priorities straight. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But you see, there's so much money, and again, it all boils down to following the money, wrapped up in athletics and stuff that frivolous stuff, real frivolous stuff. And, you know, I'm thinking about teaching in the private school now.
Yeah.
Because really, I feel like I'm being underutilized professionally here. And you know, I went in for an interview. The principal was asking me all this. When I was interviewing with the principal, she was asking me, I said, "Ma'am, before we even talk about the highbrow aspirations, let's try to establish a law and order in the classroom. let's get that out to, like, quest for fire type stuff, like having them sit down for 5 minutes.
Yeah, before we build the race car, let's at least try to keep the hubcaps on the wheels.
Oh, but yeah, let's invent the wheel.
Yeah.
You know. Okay.
But you know what though, Kevin? Honest to God, I can. You know, we've been talking since before you made your move, and you're a different guy since you went home.
Oh yeah.
I think it sounds like it's been good for you, and it sounds like you made the right decision.
I have. I think in certain ways, though, and I don't want to justify them, but you know, the right wing often talks about, well, we don't have the educated workforce and all that, and you know, like I tell these young people that when you act up in class, it justifies everything they're saying about you. You know, we have a certain responsibility. You know, there's a certain thing called self responsibility on our own too. You know, and believe you me, I'm a diehard liberal, but hey, you know, after a while, you know, what is it says in the Bible? Don't put your pearls before a swine.
No, I know, but you know, you're that way because you're a liberal. You're not working backwards like the other side is.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? The other side has been very good. You know, you had to justify what you just said. The other side has been very good at making us do that. You know, there's the most personally responsible people on earth are liberals and progressives. Because we take it upon ourselves to think about solutions and to try to grassroots organize and try to build consensus and try to build the movement that can change and save America.
Yeah.
Conservatives don't do that. They sit around pinching their pennies and counting their hoard like Scrooge McDuck and saying, you know, I got mine, screw you people.
Yeah. And, you know, I almost feel kind of guilty that I'm resorting to going into a private school, but the reality is, there's the same thing which I want to maintain, which is my sanity.
Well, amen to that. Amen to that. Well, we're about out of time. I got to roll on, Kevin. Great conversation, though. Thank you so very much.
Okay, Bob.
All right.
Always a pleasure.
Man. Oh, my
always
pleasure entirely. Take care, Kevin.
Okay, God bless. Bye.
You too. Bye now. One of these days, I'm gonna get to New York City. Show the kids. Hell, show me. All of New York I've ever seen is the bus ride between LaGuardia and JFK. Honest to God. Sorry, I'm a hillbilly. You know, it's tough to get us out of the holler. It really is. My traveling companion and I were talking on the way back from D.C. about how glad we would be to get home. Part of the reason that we took the odd route over the very spine of the Appalachians was just to cross the West Virginia line a little bit sooner and be able to feel like we were back home. I know, crazy. Listen, that's pretty much it for the program tonight. Just to let you know, tremendous thank yous go out to a small handful of folks who have pushed our monthly fundraising up to about $800 for the month, which means that we're just a couple of hundred behind for the middle of the month. We're so very grateful. It is, that was inspiring to see. One person who shall remain nameless sent in a big chunk of their tax refund. And like I've said before, it's humbling. It is humbling to know what the horn means to you guys. If you can help us try to stay out of the hole, or dig out of the hole that we pretty much live in, we sincerely do cherish your contributions toward keeping Conversation Radio on the air. You can do it by mail, you can do it by PayPal. The button is there at headonradionetwork.com. There's the one-time button, or you can set up a subscription for whatever you're comfortable with. If you prefer not to use PayPal, but you prefer to use the regular U.S. mails, you can send it to Head On Radio Network, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, Paul Mary Boy, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, West Virginia, 25801. 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. And as long as you guys are there, we'll be here. There's just a lot of stuff that needs doing over the course of keeping stuff like this on the air. We've got, you know, among other things, we've got a the telephone unit that we use needs to go in for repair. But it just can't, because the repair bill is usually anywhere from $600 to $1,000 to get it fixed. And we don't have that now. We just don't. But we continue to muddle through and muddle along, and only because of you. So know how sincerely we do all appreciate it, because all of us, whether it is anybody involved with this network, from the moderators in the chat room to the moderators on the forum to the news ninjas to the bloggers to the on-air people, we're all doing it because we ourselves get so much out of it spiritually by virtue of the connection that we get to make with y'all and the connections that y'all form among yourselves and with us. It is the most profound thing I have ever experienced outside the birth of my children and the wedding to my wife in my life. So many thanks to all of you who make this go. Many thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer and webmaster. Many thanks to Peter Godbold, who, with a little help from an entirely frustrating internet service provider, will be back on the air tomorrow night. Thanks to the hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. He's raising funds too, and he needs help, because he covers the streaming expenses and archiving expenses and bandwidth expenses for everything outbound from this network. WhiteRoseSociety.org. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.